Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hi, I'm Sarah Smith. If you're the type of person that goes to Liberty as other people would go on safari, and the fact that John Lewis doesn't have a funeral service makes you fret, Sarah Smith cleaning cloths are for you. Sarah Smith, available from Sainsbury's, for the posher washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
I am the very model of a modern archer's listener. I've been listening for years and years. I never lie, Rob Titchener. Know the folk of Ambridge and can quote the plot historical from John being subtracted to Nigel falling off the hall. Dumpty 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 dum. They've had cricketing and gaslighting and 12 weeks of enamelling, ratings chasing, Helen's fainting, Alistair de Shell's horse paintings. But it's sonic and iconic and bucolic and is full of cows and bunting, theft and eggmobiles and Christmas pantomimes and rows. Dumpty 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 dum. I fear Alice, Chris and Jamie Perks are kidnapped by the Button Twins. The Fairbrother are grooming Bert and Jazz has moved back in with Jim. Last year things got floody and poor Kenton teetered on the brink. And this year they got bloody and now Helen's banged up in the clink. Orange is the new beige. Of late it has been quite hard work to be an avid Archers fan. I miss Katie Ertz and Bartleby and Pip's attempts to bag a man. Who can save us from this drama? That is what you'll hear me wail and moan. Get on a plane to Hungary and bring the Dalai Lama home. Oh, I feel like I live in Ambridge. It's exhausting. I feel all done in. So if you want to find me, I'll be drinking gin with Lillian. Dumpty, 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 dum. Bah.
Over the past 5 years, Slibbing World and Sunbury have taken part in Race for Life in memory of a much-loved member sadly lost to cancer far too young, and have raised many thousands of pounds for this cause close to our hearts. Our team, Angel Delights, will be taking part again this year and would welcome your support. Our Just Giving page is justgiving.com/angeld-lites, or contact at Dusty Substances on Twitter. Thank you.
Now, folks, before I start, I have to say I'm recording this on my iPhone, which is a wondrous thing in and of itself, but it probably means I'll sound like shite, because this is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the Victorious Save campaign, that is Royfield Brown, and with me are the furious group of Ely villagers, that is Lucy Freeman. There you go. I just read that. It's quite good, that, Lucy. But I'm going to say that again. And with me, I have the furious group of Edgeley villagers. That's not an easy thing to say.
Edgeley villagers. No, it isn't.
No. And with me, I have the furious group of Edgeley villagers, that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of our Root B storyline is you. Today's Dumpty Dum is not a Dumpty Dum at all. It's a tribute to Gilbert and Sullivan by Fiona. And it's also a tribute to a verbal dexterity. So well done to you, Fiona.
Yes.
But Lucy,
mm-hmm.
Can you remind our listeners how they can win the accolade of Dumpty Dummer of the Week?
Yes, if you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, give us a plot prediction, or knock off your boss in the Peak District, then ring us on 02030313105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to lovely Shambridges for her amazing voices, to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, and to Sarah Smith for sponsoring us. Thanks also to Derek, who is working hard on the Leave campaign. He would like full independence from Europe, Scotland and Hollerton Junction. Oh, and also thank you from the real Derek, lovely Martin Greaves, who has completed, and I have yet to sponsor him. I'm very sorry, Martin. I'm assuming it's still open because I haven't done it yet. Sorry. And he did very well. Nobody fell off. Nobody split their difference or anything. And they did a very good bike ride. And it's all raised lots and lots of money. So hoorah and well done.
Knocking off your boss in the Peak District.
Yes.
Is that Matt Crawford to come back, that Russian mafia storyline?
You what?
Knocking off your boss.
In the Peak District, yes.
Mafia boss, Don. Knocking them off, killing them.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Well, the answer is no.
No, it isn't. No.
You're referring to Lillian.
I am, yes.
On this week's episode, of course, from Goddess Diva, who's still Team Lillian. Hurrah for you, Goddess. Vicky from Cambridge, who isn't. Claire, who wants to celebrate Susan. Jan from Cannes, who has an update on the Elderflower Cordial Retail Price Index. Yokel Bear, who says, thank God for the Grundies. And Jacqueline Berto, who thinks that Susan deserves to shrivel. And Witherspoon, who's got a warning for Lillian. But first, let's hear about Lucy V. Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
Open Farm Sunday, our favourite time of the year when the agricultural community of Ambridge gets to patronise the life out of baffled townies, played by a group of muttering sound effects. So how did they all do? Pip took a leaf out of her grandmother's book and became quite hooty. She talked about the beef being exclusive. Adam did his CBeebies presenter impression by asking his audience if they had got a sat-nav in their car and if they knew what it was. Josh somehow managed to sound like some sort of Thai street hawker with his damn eggs. Special price, discounted, very good, love you long time. Toby said he liked to think of himself as a buccaneer. The rest of us like to think of him as a bucking idiot. He said Norfolk's still a long way away and sounded quite surprised. It won't have got any nearer, will it, Tobes? Not everything's on bloody wheels. Lillian went off on a mucky weekend with Justin. They spent the whole time holed up in a hotel in the Peak District. If they were going to do that, surely they could have saved some money and used the travelodge on the bypass. She said she couldn't talk without some coffee inside her, which would make a nice change from a septuagenarian property developer. Talking of that, Susan said that Bert's marrow was unfeasibly big. Personal, but I bet it cheered him up. Helen has made a new friend. She's a fellow inmate. A public relations manager called Sophie. Ha ha! No, of course she's not. This is the Archers, and therefore she's a jolly cockney sparrow called Kaz. She's got scraped back hair, and she's got kiddies called Jaden, Isis and Brexit. Cor blimey, love, where are you from? Downton Abbey, she said chirpily, picking up her chimney sweep's brush and high-kicking round the prison with Dick Van Dyke. And in an astonishing turn of events that shook us all to the core, Route B has been abandoned. Edgeley's got it. Hurrah! Who cares? With everything else that's happened, having a dual carriageway going straight through the Brookfield B-Day has paled into insignificance. To celebrate, everyone went to the ball for a party, and Dave got a bit overexcited and overtired and started crying and wet himself, so he had to sit down with his mummy outside, and then he was allowed back in, but no more Haribo. We had a nice picnic with the Grundies, who still seem blithely unconcerned about the imminent return of Caroliver, and the fact that in their absence the Grundies have filled their house with pigs, ferrets and flowery plaster. But as long as we can go blithering on about haymaking in the old days, it's all right. The Resurgam Garden was put into jeopardy by the insurance company, who wanted them to concrete over the river. Eddie and Linda consequently had a bust-up over whether Eddie would help her or not. Not was the result, so Bert and the fair buttocks stepped into the breach and turned Linda's vanity project into something resembling a high-security centre parks. Rex's self-respect has now hit a new low, which was hard to imagine. He's agreed to go and look at a demo of progesterone monitoring with Pip. You lucky, lucky bastard. The technology allows you to spot who's on heat, apparently. Rex. Rex is definitely on heat, I would say. The Fair Buttocks and Josh all had a row about Organ and Mincer's restaurant, who want more eggs than the Fair Buttocks can provide. Are the Fair Buttocks only allowed three storylines? One, Toby overpromising. Two, Rex trailing round after Pip. Three, Josh coming to the rescue. Repeat once a week for the next 150 years. And in the most irritating part of the week, Toby referred to Josh as his homie. What homie? As in homie county or what? Why does Toby speak like this? What is wrong with him? But the biggest and best news was for Susan, who managed to convert Pat's request that she ran extra shifts at the Bridge Farm shop to cover for absent Anya into a demand from Pat that she canter into the shop like Mary Portas in a polyester tabard and save it with her extensive retail experience. They'll be selling Ferrero Rocher and turkey Twizzlers in a trice. Jolene's campaign to bring Kenton and Silent Wayne together continues in her usual incredibly overcomplicated fashion, and she's now roping Fallon and fried breakfasts into her peculiar plans. Anyway, it's worked. And now Kenton, Wayne and Beverly Drains are in a ménage à trois, and much good may it do them. The end!
Oh. That's a triumph. Well
done. A triumph.
It was. A veritable triumph. Yes, I enjoyed that this week. Well done, you. Well
Thank
done.
Thank you very much.
Where do we start? Now, we did a little bit of that Brexit chat last week, so we can't do that.
Oh, and also, I need to apologise to everyone, because I went mad and said the same thing twice. We played the same call, and I said the same thing.
No, you didn't.
Didn't I?
We played the same call twice, and I was fully cognizant of the fact we played the same call twice. Now, because of our timing schedules, everybody in Dumb-Dumb-Land, it meant that the week before last, we recorded a little bit earlier than normal. So we got a couple of calls in after Lucy and I had recorded, but before I actually edited, of which Vicky from Kenya was one of them. Now, because I quite like the call, I decided to throw it in. So we had a call from Jojo Sexy Heels and Vicky from Kenya. I put it in. Then Lucy wasn't aware of that and then responded to it last week and I put it in again. So I actually knew that we had, but you didn't. So it's fine. Don't worry.
OK. Right.
But we have listeners with eagle ears.
We do.
That went, I have heard this before, but they hadn't heard you respond to it before. And that's the reason I put it in again.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
There we go. So last week, Lucy.
Yes.
Can we sum it up? Other than chirpy Cockney sparrows and whatever, was it a slight return to...
It was, actually, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
to normality. It wasn't dominated. I mean, I now think what's happening... is having gone from, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what's happening at Blossom Hill Cottage? We're like, oh God, are we not going to the prison again, are we? Because I've just felt it's not moved on. It hasn't moved on at all in 2 weeks.
That's not strictly speaking true, because we are seeing the fact that Helen is slowly but surely bonding with Jack and she's starting to feel protective of Jack, Anthony, Pat, Paul, Ringo, Mungo. And... the fact that, you know, she doesn't want Rob to have anything to do with him. So it has moved on, but it's moving on at a snail's pace.
It really is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing for me? Oh, Root B.
Yeah.
Root B. Now, wasn't
that
a shocker?
Had anyone even remembered about it?
Well.
It was like, Root what? Oh, the roadie thing.
Root
Canal.
Yeah. It was a shocker. I was really surprised. I was convinced, absolutely convinced, they were going to plough through the Brooker's B-Day. I was.
Yeah.
With that. Mm.
Well.
Or maybe not.
I saw, you know, lovely Paul Douglas.
Yes. I saw
lovely Paul Douglas at the weekend because we are both on the board of our local credit union and we had our away day this weekend. And he said, oh, God, that made me so cross. And I said, why? Because of the storyline. He said, no, because he's a local councillor. And he said... as if they put planning decisions on the website before they'd gone through it in the meeting, as if they'd put it on the press office. And he said the way that they'd, he said some things in the Archers, they kind of investigate and do so perfectly, like, you know, spending all that time with the Helen and Rob storyline, you know, spending time with the charity and spending time meeting women that it happened to and all this. And then other stuff, they're just like, oh, shit, they probably do it like that. That's probably fine. And he said it's completely wrong how they would actually do it if that was a proper planning decision.
Mm. This is where we need all the local councillors that listen to this show.
And there are a lot of them.
Exactly. This is where, you know, it's your time to shine. You call in. Speak pipe in, we mail in, and, you know, go through the rigours of local government decision making.
But in an entertaining fashion, please. Thank you.
Well, no. Keep it real. Subsection B of Committee of Road Planning. Yes. But anyway, I think this show might be somewhat torturous on folks' ears, Lucy, so we might have to make this one brief. Which will be somewhat of a tonic for the almost 2 hours marathon of last week. Mm. I saw the caps on that tweet.
I warned my mum I said, it's 2 hours this week. And she said, oh, well, I shan't listen to all that then. She said,
but
I'll fast forward through some bits. And I thought, me, that's who you'll fast forward through. Me, you'll listen to Royfield.
No, well, that's absolutely the opposite to most people's experience of actually how they deal with the Sunday supplement, that is our podcast, as somebody said on the Twitters, that you can dip in and dip out.
Lovely Alison, wasn't it? Nozilla said
very elegant way of putting it, saying that, in other words, people just get bored.
Yeah, and then you can either light the fire with us at the end of the week or stick us under the guinea pig. That's fine.
So, shall we go to those calls?
Let's go.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Who's first, Lucy?
Jan from Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
We need some special music for the retail elderflower cordial retail price index. If that's possible, Mr. B?
Yes, no. Because remember, back in the day when we used to do the Borchester Land.
Yes, we had some bingly bongly financial music. We did.
Hello, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. And I'm just calling in with two quick points. The first one is about the elderflower cordial question. Here in Vancouver, it's 500 milliliters, which is the equivalent of 17 ounces UK, for $7 Canadian, which equals 3.8 UK pounds. So I'm not sure where we stand in relation to the other places that people have called in about, but that's my contribution to the question. Also, I just wanted to comment, Lucy, I'm with you 100% on the Lillian and Justin question. I think she will rue the day that she ever took up with Justin Elliott. I think she should be putting her time and energy into her own business, into growing her own business. I think her self-esteem and self-worth would grow enormously if she saw her own business thriving again, instead of putting all her energy and time into Justin's business. Bye.
Yes, Jan from Cannes. 500 mils for $7 Canadian. I don't know what that means in English. And she says a boot,
half a litre,
which is very exciting. I've never heard a proper Canadian say a boot, but they really do, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And a boot, what? And a is what they say all the time. Now Canadian dollars are just over half of our English pence, so it's about 55p.
okay.
So right. Work that out, folks.
Yep.
If you can be bothered or fussed or interested.
And she's with me. She's on my team, my Gillian team. You've got quite a few as well.
I was surprised, right, that I had as many adherents to my philosophy on the, let the wrinkly shag.
Especially Goddess Diva, because she never agrees with you.
I know. She was upset with herself.
I know she was.
Ye gods, I agree with Royfield. Yeah, but so yes, I must admit now, folks, I don't want this to somewhat dilute your opinion of my coherence when it comes to me thinking about stuff. But sometimes I'm a little bit contrary just because it makes for much more interesting listening. I can't say I agree with you, Lucy, all the time. However, I did heartfully believe that Lillian and Justin should be able to just do whatever they want, because Justin's marriage is somewhat of a an interesting thing to behold anyway. Mm. And he obviously isn't living with his missus, so I'll just let him get on with it. And we're all presupposing that Justin's wife, Miranda, and who's to say that she's having an affair? Mm. So just whatever, let him go on. But anyway, I was somewhat surprised so many people agreed me as they did. So thank you.
But to be fair, when we meet in real life, we argue about everything, don't we?
No.
Well... Right. And yes, I agree that Jan from Cannes needs to, no, not Jan from Cannes, that I would agree with Jan from Cannes that she, that if Lillian expended the time and energy that she spends worrying about blokes and trying to make Justin look good on actually dealing with her own business, she'd actually be a lot more satisfied.
Yes.
Right. Next call on similar vein. Goddess Diva.
Just got home from work. Just had some beautiful bubble and squeak. And even that's not cheering me up. Heartbroken over the situation in Orlando. Love is love. And that's why I wanted to ring. I wanted to talk about love being love. And how much we judge other people and how much we shouldn't be judging people. And we certainly shouldn't be judging Lillian and Justin. She's not an idiot. She's really not an idiot. She knows what she's getting into. Though I hate the expression a woman of the world because it makes it sound like somebody who's up for a shag. Maybe she is. Maybe she's got some companionship. Maybe she doesn't want to have to wash his pants and deal with him farting all night. Leave Lillian and Justin alone. They're having a lovely, lovely time. She's not telling any lies. Miranda's not going to be embarrassed. They're going to have a lovely time. It's not his money she likes. It's him. Maybe there's part of it that's a lifestyle, but it's him. So, yeah, heartbroken over Orlando and thinking, stop judging Lillian. It's lovely to hear her happy again, and it's lovely to hear her have her mojo back with the fair brethren as well. Okay, I'm off to bed.
Controversially, Team Lillian and therefore Team Royfield, as we've said. Yes, yay for you. I'm not being judgmental. I don't think I probably am. Yeah. But I just don't want her to get hurt. And she disappoints me when she does stuff like that because it's just silly. She's better than that. Anyway, there we are.
You know what? If none of us want to get hurt, we shouldn't get out of bed in the morning.
No.
We all have disappointments and whatever. It's called life.
Do, 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 do. Yes, I know. Should we do Vicky from Cambridge now?
Mm-hmm. Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Vicky from Cambridge here. Lillian, what are you doing? I'm Team Lillian. I think Lillian's wonderful. But setting aside the whole sort of lack of morals on this one, really, what is she doing with a prat like Justin? All that's going to happen is she's going to get hurt. And that whole bit about the end where he said he was going to pick Miranda up from the airport, talking about rubbing her nose in it, it just feels like Lillian's got absolutely no self-esteem, and that is really, really hard to listen to, because you know that we're going to go back to that awful scene where she was sitting in the bar trying to chat up people, and oh, it was horrible. So partly to say that, and partly to say, I don't know where this is going. Does anybody else feel that this is a little bit bitty, that we've got these odd storylines that are not really sitting together at all? Like we've got the Lillian storyline, we've got what's going on with Route B, which at least finally they've done that one. We've got the sort of the Pip and the horrible fair brethren. Does it feel like we've got lots of different writers and they're all kind of slotting their bit in and none of it really gels together? That's all I wanted to say, really. It's that was it. Apart from, I feel that I ought to put in a clunky reference to the EU referendum. That really didn't sit anywhere, did it? It was a case of, oh, I'm voting in because blah, 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 blah. Are you? I'm voting out because blah, 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 blah. Good. We've got that one out of the way. Anyway, moving on.
Vicky from Cambridge says, yes, why Justin? She says. Well, he sounds more... No, I mean, I did like Matt, even though he turned out to be a shit. I did like Matt. And I do think there is a lifestyle-y element, as you say, to Lillian, to Justin appealing to Lillian, because he, you know, has that kind of gentleman farmer thing, and he can afford to chuck money at everything. And, you know, Lillian does have a bit of a propensity for falling for that. And I also agree absolutely, Vicky from Cambridge, that the other storylines were feeling a bit jigsawed together, you know, just sort of a little bit of the fair buttocks and then a little bit of Bert and a little bit of Linda. But it's kind of getting back into its stride again now, I think, as Royf said. It's kind of it's pretty much back to where it was, and we're getting a broader breadth of stories, and they're all a bit light still, but, you know, hang in there, because I think that there's one coming that isn't going to be. So, you know, I think we are heading back into more sane waters or less top heavy?
It's going to be less top heavy. Just think about it. We've had single wicket, open farm Sunday, which is always my favourite.
It was the best open farm Sunday ever.
And you know, they've managed to shoehorn in all that resurgam nonsense and the Queen's birthday.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I pay my licence fee for.
I love the way every time it's going wrong for Linda, she says, it's for Her Majesty. As if that's going to, you know, all of a sudden make it, oh, I'm so sorry, I'll do it for nothing then, Linda, if it's for Her Majesty. Yes, I know. Yes, we are back. It feels like we're back. And I didn't have to brace myself this time when I listened. I kind of could just do it and without worrying about what the hell I was going to be faced with. Claire from Clapham.
Hi, Royfield and Lucy and Dumpty Dummers. I just wanted to say I very much enjoyed the spat that you had in this week's Dumpty Dum, whether Lillian was right to accept the proposition from Justin or whether it demonstrates a sort of lack of self-esteem. I have a varying moral position on this, but I think it's really important to look at it from Lillian's perspective, and I entirely expected her to say yes because, you know, she just enjoys stuff. And I think if she thought she would have a good time, I don't think she's that bothered that it's not necessarily forever and that she's not the only person in this man's life. I think she looked at it and thought, I enjoy spending time with him. I'm going to have a bit of fun. Why not? And I think that is entirely aligned with Lillian's worldview. I also wanted to reflect on Wednesday's episode, which I've just listened to again in the car on Thursday. And, oh, it was just fantastic for Susan. What a brilliant Susan Carter episode. Let's just celebrate how marvellous it was. First of all, she put Linda back in her box about getting all uppity about the competition from Bert. And by the way, why has Linda got so difficult about this kind of stuff recently? I didn't think it was like her. She got all antsy about the Fallon's, you know, jumble trail and, you know, new people in the village starting to do activities that she might used to have a monopoly on. And now she's got all het up about Bert, which is, you know, not really a most divisive character in the village by any means. I'm not quite sure what the script writers are trying to do there with Linda's approach to all this. It's like she needs to be the centre of attention and organise everything or it doesn't count. And I thought Linda was better than that, so I'm not quite sure what that's going on there.
Yes.
Yes, Linda has suddenly started being really difficult about things. She was really aggressive with Fallon. And she's been really funny. I don't know whether we're supposed to think, I think, that she's feeling insecure about something. So she's marching around trying to sort of mark her identity onto everything and prove that she's still, as if she feels threatened in some way. But I can't quite understand by whom. I mean, she can't be threatened by Fallon, who's done one fairly successful jumble trail. Bert and the garden thing, she kind of caved on that anyway because Bert was, as Witherspoon says later on, he was a mensch about it and just did it because, you know, for the sake of the village. So it seems to be another one of those sort of rapid personality shifts that's supposed to herald some kind of issue emerging, but I don't know what it is. I do hope there isn't an issue with Linda because she's a good enough character as it is. She's complex enough. You don't need to sort of simplify her. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think I agree. But I go back to when she first came in and she was a total pain in the arse and was in everyone's business and was telling everybody she basically told everybody in the village how to do things other than farm. No, she even did that as well. No.
Well, the first week she was there, she had a run-in with David, was it?
Oh, she had a run-in.
Brian, marching across someone else's land, anyway.
Yeah. There was all those right-of-way storylines which went on literally for decades. But talking about complex characters, we got our knuckles wrapped, or at least I did more than you, Lucy, because I think for the most part, I've had some quite nice feedback about my Muhammad Ali reminiscences. Mm-hmm. And because it did just mean an awful lot to me personally, to me growing up. And dare I say it, gave us black folks confidence that we could actually be black. And I didn't quite crystallize the point as succinctly as that last week, but that's kind of what he meant to people of color. A listener did say on Facebook that she had to switch off. It was too much Muhammad Ali and not enough Alan Devereaux, Sid Perks.
Oh.
And I did send her a message saying, sorry that, you know, you thought it was kind of unbalanced, but we do have a noble tradition on this podcast of mentioning people who have died, have passed, who Lucy and I were fond of.
Mm-hmm.
So did a little bit of Prince. You did Victoria Wood.
Yep.
For me personally, I did know that Millie had mentioned Alan. So in her bit. So I just thought, well, I wasn't going to really say anything too much. However, we should have said something.
Yes, we should.
And we should have. So you were fundamentally right. And the one thing I'll say about Sid Perks being a complex character was that he absolutely was that. My gateway storyline into The Archers, as I've said ad nauseum, was Kathy Perks' affair with Dave Barry, the policeman, in about 1984. She was married to Sid Perks at the time. And Sid Perks was the landlord. For people that didn't know, the landlord of the Bull. At that point, Kathy was a school teacher and she had lots of storylines. I forget exactly what she taught at the school, but it was a school outside of the village. Sid Perks as a character was complex because he was a nice guy, in inverted commas. He managed the cricket team. He managed the pub. He was absolutely a linchpin of the village, but he was a homophobe.
Yeah.
He could not get his head around the fact that Adam was out and gay.
Oh, yes.
And was on the cricket team. And it's a credit to the script writers that you could actually not root for this homophobe, but I still actually liked him.
Mm.
He was a bigot. And he wasn't shy in coming forward about it. It wasn't as if he shouted from the top of his lungs at the Bull, you know, no gays on the cricket team. But it was, you know, two shades less than that. You know, he made his unease very, very plain.
Yeah.
But because of the way that the character was written, you still went with him as a person. You know, you didn't just go, oh, you know, just run him out of town. And I do mourn Alan's passing. And Sid Perks was a great character. And, you know, the whole Jolene, Kathy, Kenton square was in effect initiated by Sid. So yeah. There was Sid and Kathy. Sid has an affair. No, sorry, Kathy has an affair first. Then Sid has one with Jolene. Leaves Kathy to be with Jolene. Kathy is then the jilted woman. Before Sid passes, Kenton ends up with Kathy. Kathy is raped. Their relationship never recovers. Kenton then finds himself with Jolene. So, and that whole kind of uncomfortable square started off with Kathy's relationship with Sid. And yeah. He was a great character and an amazing actor. And as the listener said on Facebook, had an extremely distinctive voice, which
yes.
is
yes.
sorely lacking, sorely yes. lacking.
I don't know whose call we're doing now. Yes, Claire from Clapham, I completely agree. That someone said on the Twitters, if you didn't enjoy Susan's response to Pat, when then there's something wrong with you. Absolutely.
I think it was dusty substances.
Yeah. That scene
was brilliant.
It was the way Susan, you could hear the cogs going click, 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 as she's trying to work. How yeah. can I make myself sound really good out of this? It was just brilliant. And then it is because Pat said the word, if you could manage it. And she meant, if you wouldn't mind, if you could fit it in. But Susan heard the word manage. And that was, oh, you want me to be a manager? So my Neil's a manager and I'm a manager. Good old Susan.
Yeah.
I do love her. She's so transparent in the way she, you know, she just seizes every opportunity to try and sort of wring out a little bit of something to show off about out of it. It's great. I love it.
Brilliant. You know, and I think... And Mary, maybe Kerry can speak pipe in and prove us wrong on this. But I think that's a case of the actress having great comic timing.
Yes, absolutely. And
so that they've actually built that into her character.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember way back in the late 80s, early 90s, Susan Carter
being funny.
So funny.
No.
She was just a gossip.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a bit of a bit of a harsh turnabout.
Yeah, yeah.
But now there is this other layer, which I'm sure is all down to the actress, of which then the script writer then kind of layered that on top.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was absolutely cracking. That was. Who have we got yet? Yokel Bear.
Mm-hmm.
I had a bit of a thought this week because one of the best things that happens on The Archers, and that happens quite regularly, the exchanges that I enjoy most are between Linda and Eddie. And it's almost like there's a bit of kind of class warfare going on, isn't there? You've got Linda, who's the kind of very bourgeois middle class character, is constantly in battle with the working class Grundys. I just love this week the whole fence round along the River Am. It was a perfect kind of analogy for capitalism, really, wasn't it? Which is that Linda was demanding that Eddie the worker did something, but Eddie was flexing his kind of, you know, well, you know, if you need me to do this, you're going to have to pay me. I love the fact that the Grundys are in it because when you look at the other characters, you know, they're quite kind of bourgeois, for want of a better word, landowners and what have you. And the Grundys are the counterpoint to that, which is that the vast majority of people who live in a rural setting are very working class and probably financially much worse off than, say, working class people working in a city. The levels of rural poverty. One thing I found out recently was the poorest place in Europe, believe it or not, is Redruth in Cornwall. It's got the lowest level of income in the whole of Europe, which I found incredible. So I think the Grundys kind of represent the struggle for ordinary people to stay in the countryside where their families have come from.
I like a bit of class warfare between Eddie and Linda. I think Linda wants what she wants. Eddie wants what he wants. They're both as stubborn as each other. They're both as entrenched in their position. The thing is about the Grundys, everyone else in Ambridge is either tasteful or aspirationally tasteful. Like, Susan isn't tasteful, but she's aspirationally tasteful. She really wishes she was. She understands it, but she sort of gets it wrong. And the Grundys are just absolutely tasteless. You know, they produce, gnomes pulling moonies and, you know, bloody fairy huts.
Considering that you're a class warrior, right?
Yeah, I'm not a class warrior.
Well, considering that you're so sensitive to the nuances of class.
Yes.
Right. The fact that you are now an arbiter on taste belies the fact that you are middle class, Freeman.
Right.
Just saying.
I don't really understand what that means.
Well, because you've said, right, that the Grundys are tasteless.
Yeah.
Right? That...
No, but I didn't get to the end of that. I was going to say, because it's
I jumped in too soon?
Because it's the hierarchy of need, you know. They're not earning money to buy an eco-cotton gazebo. They're earning it to actually, you know,
survive.
And everyone else is just, you know, apart from... Ed and Emma, who are also Grundys, you know, it's everyone else is kind of it's all about, you know, Fallon selling things that are massively unnecessary, and Bridge Farm is all about, you know, organic aubergines and all that sort of stuff, and but the Grundys are absolutely, if we do not bring in a certain amount of money this week, we will not have enough money to pay our rent and buy our food. And that's where the sort of they haven't got excess money to be tasteful. They've just got money to, you know, sell things quickly, to make things quickly, to live quickly.
Well, on a related point, do you find Donald Trump absolutely fascinating? For the simple reason that he comes from three generations of money. And he is absolutely crass and has no taste.
Yeah, but that's money, though. That's not class, is it?
No, but in your hierarchy, and and I forget, is it Maslow? What's the name of that bloke that did the hierarchy, which you're kind of alluding to?
Can't remember.
Begins with an M anyway.
It's very working class to remember who you're quoting.
But it comes from three generations of money.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't expect him to be as brash and as uncouth, in inverted commas, as he actually is. He's not a self-made man at all. He likes to pretend that he is, that he started with nothing and he made his gabillions. But he didn't. And that's the thing. Was one of the many things I find fascinating about that man.
But he made his family made their gabillions in trade, didn't they? It's not inherited wealth. So you wouldn't expect there to be class associated with that.
But my point is, though, it was his grandfather that made all the money way back when. And then there is his father. And his father then bequeathed him a shed load. So by that time, you would have thought they were almost going to be Manhattan landed gentry socialites.
Yeah.
But they're not. Which, three generations of money in the UK, you're going to be hoity-toity.
No.
No?
No.
Three generations of that amount of money?
Yeah, no, you meet some awful people who are really, who've got lots and lots of money, and they've had lots and lots of money for generations, and they're still horrible people. You know, easier in the UK because you get sent to private school or public school.
Yeah,
but, and you learn how to camouflage it. But ultimately, you know.
No, horrible. Let's put horrible to one side. We're on about brashness.
Common.
Whether you're a nice person or not is immaterial.
No, I meant common.
All right. Well, anyway, we don't get our knuckles wrapped for talking about class structure and US businessmen and whatever else. But we need to circle back onto the Archers, because I must admit my thoughts here are somewhat ill-formed, and I only thought about this really yesterday, thinking it was three generations of Trump cash, and why is he why is he just the oaf that he is? But anyway, moving swiftly back to Ambridge, Lucy.
Yes. Well, we've done it, really. Yokel Bear.
Oh.
That was it.
Oh, yes. All right. Hello, Yokel Bear.
Hoorah for the Grundys.
Mm.
Jacqueline Berthaud.
Oh, just before we go completely on to Jacqueline Berthaud, I did love that episode, which was just full of Grundys. Grundyful.
Grundyful. The hayfield, the picnic in the
harvest
picnic.
Yes, and, you know, Joe and his, just repeating things.
Yeah.
And loved the lovely scene with Ed and Eddie, you know, them chatting.
See, you like that stuff. I hate it.
What?
Oh, it's awful.
The fact that I like people being nice to each other.
Yeah, it's very boring. And seeing that. I like people being catty and mean. Ha!
But where was Will?
Yeah. Well, he popped up last week, didn't he? When he said that they could live at number one, the Green.
Mm.
And then he vanished again. Oh, no, she did say, it's a shame William can't come. And he was messing around with his pheasants or something, wasn't he?
Yep. Anyway. Right.
He's doing they pheasants, as she says.
Did you say Jacqueline Berthaud?
I did say Jacqueline Berthaud.
Ooh, go on then.
Hi, it's Jacqueline Berthaud in lovely sunny Saint-Gwen in Brittany, not a flood in sight. I'm back. Not that I've really ever been away from Dum-de-Dum. It's the Archers that I've not been able to cope with. The Dark Lord story disturbed me more than I cared for, and then Helen's passiveness frustrated me, and my worry for Henry still overwhelms me to the point of nightmares. Well, it's Sunday morning and I'm just bracing myself for the omnibus. First time I'll have listened in 4 or 5 weeks. I'm hoping to hear more positive views from the friends and family of Helen. And realisation must sometime hit them that they've been done. They've been had by you-know-who. And how he's manipulated them all. I'm also really hoping that Susan... I'm hoping to hear that Susan had been gossiping. gossiping in the only way that she can, in a kind of really malicious way. And she'll get it wrong big time, because, Susan, you deserve to shrivel with shame when the truth comes out. Well, have a good one, everyone. Bye.
She says Susan deserves to shrivel for gossiping. Well, what I'm hoping is that when she takes over as manager of the shop, because she's a manager, that she will find, she'll go through the stock take and she'll balance the books and realise that Rob's been siphoning money off. And that will alter her opinion of him. And what Susan thinks tends to be what the rest of the village thinks. Because the ones that think about things...
I disagree with you there. Generally, Susan comes to things after the rest of the village.
No, because, I reckon the ones that think about things, like Carol Toboggan and Fallon and people that have actually got a brain of their own, tend to disagree with Susan. But the ones that don't think about things, like Jennifer Aldridge, you just go, oh dear, yes, well, that is all a bit tricky, isn't it? You know, they tend to reflect what Susan just picks up the most commonly accepted point of view, I think. So if Susan's like a barometer, if she shifts her opinion on Rob, the rest of the village will then follow.
So I agree with you and disagree with you in equal measure, in that you're almost saying that Susan Carter has the ability to sway minds.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that she does. What she has in these situations is a bit of a lizard mind. She's purely instinctively reactive.
Yeah.
And us as listeners invariably go, oh, you know, she hasn't thought this through.
Yeah.
Right?
No, you're right. Yeah.
However, I do agree with you that she's somewhat of a barometer or somewhat of a lightning rod, if that's the right expression, I'm not quite sure, in terms of showing us how other people who haven't really exercise their brain matter on a subject would also think. However, I repeat back, she doesn't have the ability to persuade anybody about anything. She's just there to show you, well, if you haven't thought about this topic,
she's the conduit for most of the information, you know, because everyone says, I've just heard this, well, how did you, Susan said that, she's the one who...
Yeah, but how many people walk out of that shop and says, well, Susan Carter said so it must be right? They might comment on it and says, oh, yeah, Susan's in there holding court.
Susan's like the real version of Wikipedia.
Susan's convinced me that Rob Titchener is a great guy. No one actually says that.
Well, according to Wikipedia says this, so we don't believe that, do we? No, we don't. So that's okay. She's like human Wikipedia.
Mm. There's a little boy in my Aisha's class at school which is called Wikipedia.
What? He's really called Wikipedia?
No. No. I think his name's Tobias or something, but they call him Wikipedia because he knows everything about everything. In my history classes, I was kind of the Wikipedia. It was the one lesson where I could just kick my feet up on the desk and just read a comic. And Mr. Clapton just said, Brown, just get on with reading Spider-Man. You're all good in this class. And every now and then he says, wait a minute. It was a German emperor after Wilhelm the First. Okay, that'd be Frederick. Oh yeah, that's it. Anyway, so yeah, German reunification. That was the best. I love Mr. Clapton. He was awesome. Yeah.
I just got asked to correct everyone else's spelling and then got told off for talking when I handed them back.
That's a bit harsh.
I know. Life is hard, Royf.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. Angus says, let's celebrate good times, as we didn't hear a peep from Rob this week, and I won't be mentioning anything related to Bridge Farm today. Topic 1. The great Lillian-Justin affair, dum-ti-dum debate we heard in the last broadcast. Gee, I thought it was a preview of the knockdown, drag-out Trump-Hillary fights we're going to witness in the autumn. Okay, just kidding, but I firmly side with Lucy on this. First, I think that the self-esteem of all participants suffers in an extramarital affair, and I worry a lot more about Lillian's self-esteem than Justin's. Second, no matter what she says, Lillian's hopes, even subconscious ones, are being unrealistically raised. Third, and most important, Justin is Lillian's employer. even if she's paid in dresses and shoes, which, as an aside, is what set this in motion. When an employee and an employer commences a sexual relationship, it creates pathological power dynamics, which actually can cross both ways. Believe me, I've heard this in my office lots of times. My advice to both Lillian and Justin, don't shit where you eat. Next topic, Joe. When I first heard him speak this week, I thought, well, he's okay. But then I heard that single cough. What husband and I refer to as the Kate Winslet in Finding Neverland is doomed cough. Plus, he was doing all this reminiscing this week. Well, I'll just say I'm still worried. Last set of observations. Bert is a mensch, Eddie is not. That's it. Witherspoon and Angus Agus out. Talk to you next week.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Yes, Witherspoon. A warning for Lillian. He says, don't shit where you eat. Yes. You see, it's all very well, all this, ooh, wrinkly romance, all very lovely, make them happy. But she works for him. And if but this does, goes oh, wrong, he's living in her it. Sodding
does he
house.
Really work for him? He concocted
that position.
He's paying
her for sex, yes. No, but he's
paying
living,
her in frocks, which I admit is demeaning.
He's
right?
living in her house.
But he's not her boss. He actually isn't really her boss. That position as social secretary.
Would you rent out your house to somebody you were sleeping with? Actually, I withdraw that. You probably would. Nobody. And indeed, probably have. But
that doesn't mean that, you know, that Justin is her boss in that regard. That's just a financial transaction. That's just a client or tenant or whatever the heck.
At least Paul the maniac didn't live in her in the village. Lillian, it's all going to go wrong. But anyway, you've all told me to shut up.
I
and hope wrong, so
no, that's not true. That's not true. I think it's somewhat divided down the middle, and I think, you know, the majority is probably with you. But in terms of people on the Twitters, it may be divided down the middle. But I just hope that the script writers. Are going to throw us a nice curveball with this. It would be nice if they kind of end up together. It would be nice if Miranda, we then discover as listeners, has got her toy boys and lovers and all sorts, and that's the reason why she's in Geneva, etc. So it is, so we don't just have this caricature of Justin being this older, philandering, you know, CEO who just has women all over the place. Because looking at this, the man genuinely likes Lillian. He does. And yes, as I said last week, he's been somewhat indelicate with his courtship of her. But he enjoys her company, and no one can say otherwise. He genuinely does like being with her, and I just hope that, you know what, she can get some happiness, and it isn't just going to be here is another man that's kind of done her wrong, etc. Because there's much more to Justin's marriage than we actually know.
Yeah.
Anyway, right now,
we've had an email.
Good heavens, it's the first time in a long time.
The email system at Lower Loxley has apparently gone wrong, and it sent Cosmo, the report from the trustees at Lower Loxley.
Ooh, okay.
It said, Lower Loxley estate is held in trust for Mr. Frederick Pargeter, and we, the trustees, are responsible for the estate until Mr. Frederick may inherit in accordance with the terms of the trust. Mrs. Elizabeth Pargeter merely is allowed to live here until Mr. Frederick inherits. Now, I'd forgotten that.
I remembered that.
How old's Freddie now? 16.
Is he? Yeah, 14, 15, 16, something like that.
Okay,
yeah,
so we've got two years that, right. Because, yeah, I mean, if he comes into the estate, how is he going to, because he doesn't get on terribly well with his mother, does he?
Well, he's hardly going to kick her out, though, is he?
I don't know. He's not the brightest light in the harbour either, is he? Mrs. Pargeter pretends we do not exist and runs the estate as she wishes without so much as a by your leave. She has borrowed money to provide rooms through converting the old dairy, despite an agreement with Gay Grables that she would not compete with them in hotel business. She has lent money to her brother, one Kenton Archer, as if it were her own, and the estate was not entailed to her son. She sacked the highly competent assistant manager, Mr. Roy Tucker, without good reason.
Do we actually know? How do we not know that that was actually not actually Elizabeth's own private savings, the money that she lent?
Because
to
she talked about it being from did the she? Estate. Yeah, I'm sure she did.
Oh, dear.
She sacked Mr. Roy Tucker without good reason and replaced him with a completely silent woman. Someone called Lewis still apparently roams around the place without good reason. Yes. We feel that if there are further transgressions by Mrs. Pargeter, then we would have to report it to the authorities. Recently, we have to say that the entire place has been almost forgotten. After an unbelievably successful pop festival several years ago, there was a bit of an opera last year, and then it is as if the place has been entirely forgotten, and whilst we had hopes that a Dr. Locke might provide a good father figure to Master Freddy and Miss Lily, his existence almost seems to have completely forgotten as well.
Would that be of interest to the trustees?
I've no idea. After all, we all want to know more about Jessica, the petting animal.
Staying focused on topic.
Jessica, the petting animals, and the ancient retainers. Titcomb! And of course, we feel the existence of the trustees should be remarked upon. Yes, because we heard from the because she had to go and talk to the trustees to get the money to do that thing with the dairy, didn't she?
Mm.
Oh, and we've had a retail price index, Elderflower Cordial retail price index update from Wales. Welshwitch 68 said it's £3.15. That's £3.15.
Which
further bulletins as events go.
Which, you know what, stacks up pretty well against the Canadian elderflower. Because it was $7, and I say it's about 55p, so just over half is going to take you to just under £4.
Yes.
It does all work out, doesn't it?
It does.
Do you ever hear about the McDonald's index?
No.
So there's a couple of McDonald's indexes. The price of Big Macs all throughout the world. And how they're really expensive in Russia when you've done the currency conversion. And then the other McDonald's index is that no countries that have McDonald's have actually gone to war, or at least that was true.
What?
Yeah, yes. That was true up until, and somebody's going to email in, but this was true up until at least the mid-90s. And I think when NATO bombs...
No countries that don't have McDonald's.
That do have McDonald's.
So America hasn't been to war.
That both have McDonald's.
Oh.
Yes. Sorry if I wasn't clear. So the second McDonald's index is economies that can support a McDonald's do not fight each other. And I think this was true at least up until the late 90s. And everybody, when this McDonald's index came out, everybody says, what about Britain going to war against Argentina? But the first McDonald's didn't open in Argentina until like the mid 80s. So it's one of these kind of weird McDonald's indexes. But I think when NATO bombed Serbia in the late 1990s or the mid-1990s, I think there was a McDonald's in Serbia. So I think that was the first time the McDonald's index was kind of shattered. But up until that point, it was true. And it's a whole idea. The whole kind of summation is that if you have a consumer economy, you can't afford really to go to war.
Yeah. Well,
exactly.
I found out something very interesting this week, and you can edit this bit out because it might only be interesting to you, or not even you. I don't know. But I
find everything that you do and say interesting, Lucy. in fact.
I was at a meeting with a lobbying company, an extremely high-profile Westminster lobbying company, whose name shall remain entirely nameless, and they work a lot with polling groups, companies, very high profile ones, and they said, but we've recently started finding that we're getting more accurate information from another source. And I said, oh, they were being very cloak and dagger about it, and I said, oh really, what? And they went, Paddy Power.
What?
Paddy Power.
Betting
shop. And they said they've been right consistently where polling agencies have been wrong about elections, about loads of things, Brexit, everything. They reckon that they're right and the polling agencies are wrong.
So what are Paddy Power saying about Brexit?
Well, the agency that they use, the polling agency, are saying that it's very, very close. Something like 49-51 or something. Mm-hmm. Paddy Power have got...
in favour of?
Leave. And Paddy Power have got Remain miles in front. Or they did have this time last week when I talked to her. Mm. I thought it was really interesting that you'd pay gazillions of pounds to these policy wonks and then actually just have a look down the betting shop.
Mm.
Anyway, yes, enough of the retail price index for elderflower cordial.
There isn't a British Nate Silver.
I don't know who that is.
He is somebody who has this website, this company called 538, and it's data journalism is his thing. And he started off this blog and then it went into the New York Times. And he can quite unerringly predict elections. So in the 2012
So what's he
election,
saying about Hillary?
That she will be the president. But that's actually a really good point. So he built up his reputation in the late 2000s, in the late noughts, by unerringly calling all American elections on every level, Congress, Senate, etc. And he called all 50 states within 1 or 2 percentage points in the 2012 election. He now has his own website and kind of media business. And he got Donald Trump wrong, as everybody did. He said there is only I think he said 3% chance that he would become the Republican nominee.
Oh.
At the start of the process, and just said to everybody, just chill out, this is not going to happen. And of course, it got turned on his head. And because of that, the amount of glee that traditional journalists have then kind of thrown at his organisation, he's been somewhat on the back foot. But it kind of occurred to me, and I was chatting to somebody about this the other day, is that in the UK, the way that our politics is kind of structured isn't as forensic and isn't as scientific, actually, as American politics, you know, in that kind of naked sense of all the varying constituencies. Like in America, there is a Catholic vote, though Catholics don't vote en masse, but they will say the Catholic vote. There is obviously the African-American vote, the Latino vote, the Southern white vote. We don't...
Because Trump's miles down on... Is it... Hillary's like 70. African-American recognition, she's got like 73. And he's something like 7%. It's miles
down. Well, his unfavourables are record-defining. But then again, hers aren't that much better in terms of our unfavourables. But just kind of understanding political betting, it's absolutely a fascinating thing. Yeah. And they have a podcast called 538 where they look at American politics in terms of the science of it and polling data and what it really means. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And it sounds very wonkish. But you can listen to it and it is actually somewhat kind of entertaining. Yes, yeah. I'm an American politics geek, but 538 is a brilliant podcast. And just to understand the makeup of the American body politic, really, and then how it moves and sways and stuff. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. But anyway, now, so...
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites.
So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
We've done our emails.
We have.
Is it now time to have our camp coffee and Bilby's yes. tea break? Yeah.
An das deutsche Volk. Seit der Reichsgründung ist es durch
1914, June, Sarajevo. The heir to the throne of Austria-Hungary, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, assassinated, killed by a Serbian nationalist. About 6 weeks later, World War breaks out. Germany, Austria-Hungary, Russia, France, Britain, everyone is drawn into it starting in August, and then will America be drawn in?
Listen to the first show exclusively on Mixcloud today and subscribe to us on iTunes beginning January the 18th. From Washington to Obama, 10 American Presidents, the new podcast from Royfield Brown.
Do you have a National Trust sticker on your car? Do you think you could be best friends with Kath Kidson? Do you spend hours wandering around the airport looking for an organic quinoa cafe because you refuse to go to Burger King? Then Sarah Smith Cloths offer you. Available from Sainsbury's for the posher washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
I've just had a look at the Dumpty Dum shop. They've got no tracksuits, but they do t-shirts, which are very flattering. Nice if you want to show off your figure a little bit. Nick couldn't carry one off, of course, but I can.
G'day, everyone. Another good week for us on Dumpty Dum, both on Facebook and on the forum. So if you go to dumptydum.com/forums, you could get involved with a discussion about Pip's love life. We all have an opinion on that. Brexit or stay, the devil's spawn, I'll know when it's going to be okay again, Team Kirsty, and we're still talking about Henry the bargaining chip. So jump on, get involved. We know you have an opinion, and if it's something that hasn't already been said, then obviously we will broadcast that on our podcast. Over on our Facebook page, I must admit, I was driving to school one day. I do work in a school. And I heard Susan say that when she was being asked if she could help, she didn't quite see it as helping. She said she would be like a principal who's charged with turning around a failing school. And I nearly lost my coffee by my nose. So I asked others what their funny moments were. Pam Cruikshank suggested that her first job as the manager would be to fire Rob, which I think is a great idea. Karen Cunningham said, I particularly liked she's the one with the dark hair in a straight back ponytail moment in the exchange between Tom and Helen about Kaz. Helen might as well have added, you know, the chav. Oh, the archers, I do love you and your stereotypical script writing, subtly taint. Witherspoon said, if I were Pat, I would have replied, actually, more like a temporary school custodian. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And we think you have the proper qualifications. Thank you, Witherspoon. Sarah Woods-Rockle said, I actually did an over-exaggerated comedic roll of the eyes when Susan said this, despite being on my own in the dark. Moira Ravenscroft said, oh, I'm sure the best is yet to come. That's when Susan orders the new 100% organic cotton tabards. And I think if you go over to Upstairs at the Ball, Stuart Arundel may already have a graphic on that, Moira. Witherspoon also liked it when Linda lost it with Eddie on Friday, which I agree. I thought that was really funny too. But I still am amused by how people don't make her be just a little bit nicer when she's asking for something. The other thing we discussed was if someone said those sweet romantic words, I have a proposition for you, I would not be able to resist their suggestion that I became their mistress. Duh. Has anyone else been in a position where someone thought they were making a great offer but were not? Mint, but no time, said, I think I may be in a minority here because I thought that was exactly what Lillian wanted. Someone to foot the bills, be nice and romantic, but not have to move out of the Aldridge household. Come on, she didn't really think she was earning the credit card, did she? She's a woman of the world, not some 15-year-old. Personally, I think she crossed the boundary when she started to see the possibility of having her hair done on him. I don't have an issue with the relationship. I really don't have an issue at all. My concern is more, I guess, was more the way he went about it. I just thought it was unbelievably unromantic, I guess. And I think if I'm going to have an affair with someone, then yeah, I guess I want it to be romantic. Or am I asking for too much? Mint But No Time said, as for me, I was offered homemade chocolates and fudges by an artisan chocolatier. I was 14 and thought he genuinely wanted me to taste the sweets and give an opinion. I thought he wanted me as an apprentice. I drew the line when he wanted to take me to the cheapest, nastiest Chinese restaurant in town. Ooh. That's all I can say to that is, ew, Mint. Dee O'Leary, oh, you got to go on there and read her thread. She is so funny, Dee Leary. You need to get onto the Facebook page, peeps, and read that. But I'll give you one of them. She says, an ex of mine was offered £20,000 for me once. The offer went up to £30,000 when he pointed out I was pregnant. You got to go and read it. Kenny Hicks said, yes, it happened to me when Catherine Kavanagh suggested I start listening to The Archers. And Liz Figger says, he asked her in public too, so even if she'd wanted to shout at him, taking her for granted, she couldn't. Yeah, it wasn't even the fact that he asked her in public. It was just, I don't know, it was like a business transaction. Maybe that's just me. Anyway, you know what to do. Hooroo!
Thank you, Millie Bell. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Yes. So, Lucy, hit yep. us with your hashtag, the Archer's tweets of the last 7 days. Thank you very much, please.
Martha Minnie said, I wanted to rejoice at the Root C news, but all I could think of was the months of Hadley Hock nonsense we all had to endure. Do you know what? That all seems so long ago. It seems like about 5 years before Rob and Helen. Hadley Hock.
It really does. And that celebration in the ball, it did. Do you think that was the writers just celebrating the fact that, you know, that they put this ridiculous storyline behind
got
them.
Got shot of it, yes.
Yeah.
But you know what? That was so Kerry. I laughed when Susan said, well, Bert's marrow is unfeasibly big. And I thought, Kerry! That's Kerry! Then at the end he said, written by Kerry Davis. I thought, ha-ha! I knew it! Anyway, if we had any ham, said, ooh, Lillian's shown Justin her Grey Gables, brackets. Yes, I do know that's not factually correct.
That's so cool. You can't say that.
When Gore Blimey Governor Eliza Doolittle appeared in the Kaz, in the the prison scene, Twitter went hilariously nuts, which made me laugh. And Jeremy Peake had her saying, where did you come from, me old China? Downton Abbey? Cool, I had to go to Blooming Rada with the Oi Polloi. And when she said, I thought, all right, okay, stop it now. You've done that. Yes, I know she's got hilariously working class named children. That's very, very funny. And, you know, she drops her H's and she thinks Helen's a bit posh. And then she just to add insult to injury. She goes and says, yes, it's Kaz over there, Tom, the one with the scraped back ponytail. And you think, just say Croydon facelift. That's what everyone is thinking. Just say it. Anyway, now who's next? Lomalindy 12 said, if Brookfield was cut in half, perhaps Pip could have the half that's, you know, way over there. Like Northumberland, for instance. And, this is a bit rude, Tony's consultant, naughty, naughty, naughty Tony's consultant, said, has Phoebe had her head down all weekend, like her Auntie Lillian? Oh, that's very bad. That was Tweet of the Week. We forgot to do the fanfare.
Right. Right, now, let's just crack on with the end of the show, because you're probably thinking this has been painful on your ears because I'm talking to you.
You sound alright, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, dumdum.com, we've got a shop, go there, dumdum.com, you can buy stuff. And you also go onto the forum. Forum needs some love because it's a little bit kind of like tumbleweed at the moment. But go on there, post stuff, and tell us about Brexit, even if you want to. There's even a thread about that. So it's smashing. Dumdum.com, go there. Now,
can I also do something very, very quickly?
Here, go.
I don't know why. I think this would appeal to some people, but I think it really would. The people that like the stuff that I like, that when I tweet and they go, oh, yes, that's, you know, I like listening to that program or whatever. There's a book by Alexander Masters called Stuart, A Life Backwards. And it is absolutely brilliant for people that like ordinary people, just tales of ordinary people. It's absolutely fantastic. And I think there are a lot of people that listen to this that would really enjoy it. That's it. Carry on. Yes.
A Life Backwards sounds a bit like Benjamin Button.
Yes. It's not, but it's about, yeah, it's not like that, but I know what you mean.
If you would like to keep our little show on the road, there are a couple of ways this can be done. You can do this by hitting the donate button on our website, or
you can go to patreon.com, search for Dumpty Dum, and you can donate $2 a show, which is about £1.30.
Remember to get in contact. You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on our website. Or you can call us on 0203-031-3105 to leave us a telephonic message on your phone. On social media, you can find us specifically on Twitter, where we are at DumDum. Me, I'm at Roy Field.
Me, at Lucy V. Freeman. Sarah Smith, at Sarah_Smith. And Harriet, at Shambridges.
On the Book of Face, you can find us by typing in DumDum. And then you'll see some 1,200-odd like-a-lurkers who are being whipped into shape by Millie Bell, who posts clever things and people post funny things back. It's awesome.
She's great. She's like a benign kindergarten teacher, I think.
She is. She is. That's just about all from me in Canada land. Have you got any Parthian shots there, Lucy V. Freeman?
No.
Hmm. Right. Okay, so it's goodbye from me.
Oh, yes, I have. When this all goes wrong with Lillian, I will not gloat. Can I just say? I will not gloat because it is going to go wrong. Okay? Yes. Right. Good.
Well, as you said before, you know, life throws slings and arrows in our way, and it's called life, and stuff happens, and what you've got to do is just be true to yourself in the moment, cliche after cliche, seize the day, and just whatever. So there you go. That's my considered opinion, and I think that Lillian will
seize the day, or like whatever. That's your considered opinion.
Yeah, that's as philosophical,
that's as considered as you get, really, isn't it?
As I get. Whatever. Yeah. She'll be fine. She's big enough, old enough, she's a smart woman, and she knows what she's doing. You know what? You're not giving her the credit that she deserves in this at all. She knows the situation with Justin. She's all good in the hood.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Sound like Toby now, bro.
Boom.